The title of the forum is What's With Men These Days? It's a forum idea that came out of some discussions that have been going on at the village and also some issues that came out of teaching staff. We felt that it was an appropriate, it's always appropriate to address the other side of the issue. An issue which has been before us for many years now is the issue of women's rights, women's strength, women's place in the community, women in relation to men. And along the way, men have also discovered that they have some learning to do, that they have some issues to uncover. What does it mean to be a man? Now that John Wayne is no longer in the American psyche, and Rambo isn't quite as palatable as John Wayne for most men, at least not in the 80s. What does it mean to be a man? In many ways, men have frequently, always, American men have always looked to women for certain aspects of their life, for their, perhaps for their emotional life, for certain kinds of emotional and spiritual stimulation, for family orientation. I read today that some researchers have turned up that an average father spends approximately 37 seconds with his newborn up to 3-year-old child. 37 seconds a day. So clearly the man in a traditional American home is looking to his wife to carry that part of his commitment to the family, at least in the early years. Also, there's Shreve Hite, if you know her, did a study on men's issues, and in interviewing about 7,200 men, found that almost no men, a very small percentage, said that they had significant relationships with their fathers, that they were close to their fathers, 7,000 men. And many men say that it's easier to talk about issues with women than it is with men. So men in some ways have turned out to be very, very dependent on women for certain issues. So what it means to be a man in that context is it means to be very dependent on women for a whole array of life for certain American men, or for a lot of American men. Also, the question of what it means to be masculine. What does masculinity mean? What's the definition of masculinity? Traditionally, a man, when he thought of himself as being masculine, thought of himself as perhaps a frontiersman, or perhaps as a soldier, perhaps as a breadwinner, the one who takes care of the family, or perhaps as an expert. And all four of those have been challenged in recent years. Frontiersmen, how many men actually do work out there in the woods on a cow, as a cowboy, on a cow? Men work inside. Men buy things from REI or from L.L. Bean to pretend that they're outdoors people, but it's only when you come to Holden that you really get to be a cowpoke, you know. Soldier, there are very few men who find it's savory to be a soldier after the years of Vietnam. Breadwinner, men are finding that that they can't be the breadwinner for the family and live even a sort of marginally middle-class life, that the woman also has to work. Expert, women are experts today. They understand things that men don't understand, things that men used to only be the experts in. So these changes have happened. Men have experienced a sense of loss, sense of confusion. They've also discovered along the way that there are many dangers to being men. Men live, on the average, almost 10 years less than women. Males commit suicide 300% more often than women. All the major diseases leading to death show significantly higher rates for males. Men have higher murder, assault, and battery rates. Men show a significantly higher rate of drug and alcohol abuse. Men also experience something more frequently than women, which is called a midlife crisis. What happens is that men throw themselves entirely into their careers at the expense of other things in their lives, including family, male friends, and their spouses. And eventually they wake up. It can occur at any age, whether it's 25 or 65. Happens when you realize that life is passing by and you're no longer in control of exercising the options you once thought you had. So men go through that with much higher frequency than women. I just want to talk about a few other things and then turn to a panel of experts, some men and some women. The one thing I want to read is a review of a book about male friendship, because it was a very poignant review. The book was called Men and Friendships, and the book laments the death of intimacy for men in our times. The reviewer says, "A few pages into this book, I put it down and walked to my desk to write my best friend, a man. Then I called another male friend. A couple of hours and a half a dozen letters and calls later, each expressing my friendship to men in my life, I returned to the book. The stimulation to reach out to one's male friends in itself made the book valuable reading. Miller's definition of friendship, drawing from Shakespeare, is particularly poignant. Quote, friendship is the inner habit of holding someone in your heart. Something to think about for men in the room here. Think about your male friendships. Think about the men that you've loved. Think about the men that you've told that you've loved, or the men that know that you love them. Another issue that I wanted to bring out is a political issue, and that's the issue of male and female relationships in the marketplace and in other places, how men still have the option of being the dominant person in many work relationships or in companies and whatnot. And also the reality that certain institutions in our society are pretty male-dominated and male-run. One that's very crucial at this time is the military. That how men come to think of themselves in the next decades could be crucial for the in many ways. I mean, not just in the military, ecologically and whatnot, but this idea of power and domination that seems to be has resided in kind of men's way of relating to the world, perhaps more than women's way of relating to the world. That's a whole other issue, but we need to look at the political aspect of being male as well, and not just the personal. There may be other issues that we want to raise in the course of this. I thought I'd just do that as a sort of quick introduction to some of the issues which may come up. The ideas come out of an Utney Reader, What's With Men These Days, the same title that we had. It's an April-May 1986 reprint. Now, the panel of experts, I asked a few people to be reflecting on their experience as men, and also two women to be reflecting on their experience as people who have been friends and partners to men, as men have gone through some experiences. And the question that I want to put to these people is, what's your most recent experience that made you feel really good or rather uncomfortable about being a man? The most recent experience which made you feel really good or really uncomfortable about being a man? So who would like to start out? The panelists, dignified panelists here are... Here's Dan. There's Dan. And Vern in the front row. And Jody. And Randy. And I asked Julie to be here. I don't see her. Is she here? So Julie's not here, but Cynthia is. Maybe somebody else wants to sit in as a dignified woman respondent in Julie's place. Maybe Andrew, would you be willing to?
Sure.
Okay, good. We'll let you go pretty late. Bryn, you've been thinking about this a long time. Why don't you keep talking?
A couple of good things. The two things where I felt really, really happy about being here were connected, both of them were connected with some kind of AIDS celebration. There was a marvelous AIDS benefit in St. Paul at the Ordway Theater, where a group of people organized a doing of the B minor Mass, Bach's B minor Mass. And it was just wonderful to sense the solidarity between gay and straight concerned people in that situation. And of course, a lot of them were men. Billy and I grew up in Noe Valley in San Francisco, which is close to Casper Street, which is the center of the gay community. And my mother still rents, 82-year-old mother still rents the same apartment she's rented for 58 years. So we keep coming back there as home. And we were there just before we came here. And caught the beginning of the march that they have on Memorial Day, where they start at Castro and Market and they walk down to the City Hall. And there was something really, really, it was sad, but it was enormously rich experience to have the sadness kind of in solidarity and with some, you were sharing loss, you were somehow sharing, you were grieving together. A couple of the neatest experiences I've had since I came into the village were when I've been able to share, which underneath all the trappings is probably a sharing of with another man. I am still freaked out by Rambo. Every time I see that picture, I get feeling really icky about being a man. Just really icky, you know. And I look at my spouse rather enviously.
Okay, good. That's good stuff.
Sure, I'll go. I don't know how well this is going to answer the question, but I spent a semester doing some graduate study at a pretty conservative area of Idaho. It's predominantly LDS. While I was there during the semester, two men came up to me and they said, "We want to know if you're gay." Because you touch other people, you express your emotions. You seem to have a vulnerable, sensitive side. I'm not using the terms that they were using, but they were challenging me in that way, saying, you know, there's something not, obviously not masculine about you. And I took that as a compliment. I really took that as a compliment. Because it's only been in the last few years that I think I've learned to get in touch with my emotional side and to be more vulnerable. And yet the challenge of all that is what is masculinity? And I'm reminded of that when I find myself in relationships with women that women seem to say, but don't lose your masculinity. You You don't want a soft man. You want someone that's still in touch with their masculine side. I would say one of the most uncomfortable things for me as a man is when I'm with other men who say things that are offensive to me, in particular about women, and I don't take the opportunity to challenge them. And that's something that I find happens time and time again, and even here sometimes.
Good. Randy?
Well, I'm still trying to process this, but I'll just add a response. First of all, to what you just said, Dan, and that's, I've found that over the years, and I think it partly comes from being raised by a father who was pretty balanced with his nurturing and masculine side, and which I guess was a real advantage. But I found the same kind of response to men who play that macho role and you know, in little subtle ways, put women down or put them in their place, perhaps is the better way of saying it. And I usually have a response to that with those men. I suppose that, in a way, is me getting in touch with most masculinity too. When you asked the question out to me a little while ago, my first thought in trying to think that through was some of the experiences I've had. Maybe at times I felt a little too in touch with the feminine side or the nurturing side, and I don't know for what reasons I chose some of the paths I did, but I wonder why at times, including the carpentry trade that I'm in. One of the most enjoyable experiences I've had over the years was the year I spent in logging. That was really a real special thing. And in the sense of getting in touch with the traditional male roles or trades or whatever, that does have a positive feel to me. But then it occurred to me that I think the best feelings I've had about being male, about masculinity, has been in relationship. And it's in particular with a long-term time friend who is almost like a brother to me, and who has who strikes you at first as being a very masculine person, and which he is, and he comes from a background maybe not quite so balanced, and I think overcompensated toward the masculine side to compensate for the more nurturing side. Mm. And in recent years, he's really gotten in touch with all of that. And we're finding now that in our friendship, we can have a good time just identifying that in each other. And male, but at the same time being nurturing of each other, you know, the hugs come freely, you know, we can just joke around with it and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. Jody, do you want to do you?
sure. As I was thinking about the question on the table, side, Jeff, but it seems to me the theme running through all of my negative feelings, or at least a lot of the negative feelings about being in 1988 in the United States, has to do with something about power, and has to do with the ongoing struggle that I'm that at least I like to think part of my life is about, to sort of democratize my relationships in a lot of ways, right? And deal very upfront with what's going on in terms of power, both interpersonally and within institutions. So that, for instance, as Ingrid and I worked very closely together, both here at Holden and in Chicago, a lot of the most uncomfortable situations for me are situations in which we are in fact working as co-equals, or I am with another woman colleague. And none of the outside world context in which we are then working recognizes that that reality. That is, I am treated as the power whether or not I want to be. And that makes me incredibly uncomfortable. The two places it happens most often is one in political work. I mean, basically politics is a male game, and people don't recognize a feminine way of being political, right? Mm-hmm. Of creating community along with one's politics and power. The other place it happens all the time is the church. And it just makes me mad. Mm-hmm. That's the negative side. On the positive side, I was sitting on the porch 2 days ago, and my 9-year-old son Marcus said to me, Dad, did you have a girlfriend in third grade? I said, wow, this is what being a dad is all about. We'll spend the next hour talking about this one, won't we? And we did. And we just sort of went into how he's feeling about his girlfriend in third grade and sort of danced around who exactly it was. He wouldn't tell me that, but it dredged up all the stuff from my childhood about what I was thinking about my sexuality in second and third and fourth grade. And in terms of the sort of joy of invention that happens to fathers when fathering is good, right? That was a terrific moment. Mm-hmm. It sort of reawakened my joy in all that fathering stuff.
And it took more than 37 seconds, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it ain't over yet.
Now, from another point of view, for women to be thinking about what they've been seeing men struggle with around this issue and some of the experiences that you may have had of men really feeling good about being men, coming out of the struggle into some certainty, or seeing men being really uncomfortable about being men. Cynthia, do you have any thoughts on that?
For the last year where I've been living, I've been logging with a man who's the most wonderful person I've met in a long time. He's a Vietnam vet, 15 years older than me, married with a family. He has a daughter who, because of his exposure to Agent Orange, has twisted chromosomes and is slow, mentally disabled. He's adopted two Korean sons. He has more integrity than any person I've ever met. I'm just overflowingly in love with him. His wife is totally open to the fact that she's married to a really good man and is not at all threatened by our friendship, which teaches me an awful lot about love. He was in Vietnam at age 19, was very, very close to his sister. He was in the fields and was flown home to attend her funeral. She was killed in a car accident by a drunk driver. And then immediately after that was sent back to the killing fields in Vietnam. He's a Marine Corps, 6'4", 235, big man. Gives a lot of impression of like the Clint Eastwood image where he's still got the reddish skin and the reddish hair and the very sullen expressions. He doesn't say much unless he has to. He's not a chatter. But he has more kindness and love for humanity and integrity than any person I've ever met. And it's been really beautiful for me to know that and to be able to bounce some of my things that I need to work out on off on a man that's strong enough to handle them. But he's also strong enough to be very tender and gentle and delicate and loving, and you can get beyond the, I'm not saying it's macho, I'm saying very masculine. He is a big man, and I think the big men can probably get away with being more macho more than having to try to be. He's not pretentiously macho, but he is macho. He's very masculine, very strong spirited, strong willed. He's the only Vietnam vet that I've met that's honestly worked through his difficulties and has an abundance of love to give to others. He's very well liked, and he's just been a really beautiful person for me to be around. One that's, I don't know, you know, if I would have worked through anywhere near as much. As far as my needing to trust and learn how, I've been logging with him. He knows I'm not a man, my strength is not that of a man, but if I can hold my own, I'm good enough. And he expects it, And I uphold that, and it works out really well. We work together. It's really been a beautiful relationship to know that a man can be incredibly strong and also have a very tender, delicate side. He recently went to the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C., and we spoke at length about his experience there. And he told me how it took him over an hour and a half and three tries to get through the door, and that he couldn't do it without crying before even opening the door. And just to be able to share how he feels. There's times that we razz each other a lot. It's a very witty relationship. He's got a lot of spunk. He likes a woman's spunk. He's also very intelligent. A lot of the times that we deal with each other on a very spunky level, but there is a point where we can get beyond that and really talk about, you know, oh, I stuck my foot in my mouth today, and I'm doing this because I, you know, I'm trying to be something I'm not, and really get at talking things over that teach you. I can say that most of what I've learned from him has been very silent. It's just been shown. I told him that I love him, and it was really kind of neat the way I did it. And it was sometimes when people say they love you, they expect to hear it back. And he didn't need to say it back to me. I learned that by loving someone, you're the one that benefits, because you're the one that gets to feel all the wonderful things inside. And I know that he loves me too. I know that he loves a lot of people, and a lot of people have a lot of respect. But he, I guess, had to go through the Vietnam thing to realize the true value of humanity and humankind. And he's just, he's incredible. I don't know anybody else that has had to deal with, I can't imagine going through what he did with that and his sister. And he was also sent back to Vietnam twice for two tours, and then to lose the war and to come back and deal with all of that. His wife is a very strong woman too, and they're very disciplined together. They meet each other halfway and go forward. I feel that in our friendship, we do the same. He's just been a really wonderful person for me to be associated with. I talk about him a lot. I think about him a lot. It's really been a beautiful friendship. It's really been the way things should be, as far as what I would definitely define as love. And that's what's been the best part, that the man is incredibly strong and yet incredibly gentle, and able to show that and be really, really comfortable with it, and know himself and know his limitations, and also know that he can be told a thing or two too, that if he's out of line, when I was leaving, I don't think that he wanted me to go, and had a hard time expressing how, you know, that was going to be an effect, and he did it in a very antagonistic sort of way, and I had to nail him on it. And then finally, that was when I told him that I loved him. He knew it already. It was neat. It was just a really neat thing to share the friendship, the power of the strength of this person, and to share in the fact that he has it for others, especially to have probably, you know, killed people in Vietnam and then taken on children that are of another nationality that probably had the same sort of, some of their own inhumanity to deal with. He's just a very, very kind, gentle, strong, loving man. It's really been a good influence. So.
Okay. Anto?
It has occurred to me that it must be very confusing to be a man in 1988. I think I really like being a woman, and I like the friendships and the community and the support and the movement and all of that stuff. I felt very fortunate in my life to have been born who I am, to be able to experience the richness of that. And I have wished that men could have that same sort of thing. And yet, and I know some men who work very hard at that and take time away from their wives and friends to be with one another in men's groups of just friendships. But it's occurred to me that we send men very many mixed messages. We expect them to be sensitive, and yet if they get too sensitive or a little sensitive in not quite the right way, we don't really like that either. And yet we still expect them to be strong men and dads, and we expect them to know about both sort of realms. I see many men coming to me with their brand new babies, wanting to be really wonderful dads that they never had, but yet not really knowing how to do that. Expecting to learn from their wives, but that's often difficult for those families as well. There's lots of different kinds of men in my life, and one of the kinds of men in my life are very violent men, the husbands of women that I work with, or the partners of women that I work with, and they are very violent and very aggressive, and oftentimes very horrible men. And sometimes it's hard in that life to really, it's hard to see the very worst of what that can be all about. Not that there aren't violent women, that's a falsehood also. But here in this room, we have a mostly fairly sensitive men, that's why they're here. The other recent experience that I've had with a group of men has also been working with the AIDS community in Seattle, attending some classes with that group of people, and there were gay men and straight men and all different kinds of men and women there, all coming together around this one particular cause, and I've never seen such a cohesive group of men and women of all different walks of life and coming together, working on that particular thing, and it was truly one of the best experiences. Those are just ideas that I've had, as all these people have been talking. They're not really put together very well. But.
Okay, does anybody have any responses to stories that you've heard or stories of your own that you'd like to offer to the group on this issue of what's happening with men today?
I'd like to talk about mixed signals from women.
Resonating a little bit about what Dan said and what you said, that prior visit to Holden, I was lounging in the green room and ran across an old Ms. magazine with some statistics about marriage survival rates and income levels and working spouses, and found that the survival rate of marriages where the female earned I think over 30% more than the male was almost nil. That where the woman had a strong career and or a professional career, and the husband didn't, or was a laborer or something like that, the survival rate of those relationships was just none. And I think that said something to me about women's expectations of men, that mixed signal. You know, you want to take home the bacon, and you want to still change the diapers when you come home from work, too. I have a good friend who had a young son a couple of years ago, quit his job or went on leave for a year and stayed home. And I had similar experiences, too, when I was a young father, of taking my infant out into the public and doctor's appointments and photographs and stuff. And he ran the same things I did. Oh, the mother has to work. Some references to unemployment lines. These are really, truly things that really did happen to me, and also happened recently to my friend Peter. So, and they always came from women, those remarks. Usually, the other men you would see out there would be very affirming of what you were doing with your children. And they were oftentimes with older women who would make those remarks, too. So, anyway, welcome to what women think about that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any response to that? Mixed messages?
I don't know if you want a woman's response. One of the things that I would say to that is that for me, I see one of the hardest things for men and women and Christians and everyone else, gay and lesbian, is moving from the definition of what it means, a role expectation or an external standard of what it means to be masculine or feminine or male or female or sexual or whatever, or Christian, to a more internal definition of what it means to be human. And it seems, Andre, you said it's confusing to be male. I think it's confusing to be Christian or female or gay or anything else, when you look inside for the definition of who you are, for your sexuality and giftedness, and when you, for me, when I try to break away from that standard that says I have to balance masculine and feminine, or I have to fall on this continuum sexually, or as a Christian I have to be these things. When I throw that off and start listening to who I am, listening to my feelings, listening to God, it's both exciting, but also it feels a bit scary in that I don't see as many models for that. Mm-hmm. And it forces me to trust that somehow the process will work itself out, that God is graceful enough to let me grow awkwardly mm-hmm. along those lines. But it, at the same time, we reflect together, you know, there's always that part that says, but I'm unique. And I can listen to what everyone says, but ultimately I have to make up my own mind as to how I fit all the pieces together.
One of the things that's interesting is if you have a room full of men, I noticed this in a singles thing we had last week. We were talking about this and that in a singles forum, and after the forum broke up, a group of men sort of gathered on the far corner, and we had a very, very exciting, stimulating discussion. Is it true that when you break up into single-sex groups, the discussion gets more to the point?
Quicker.
Yeah, now why?
I don't know. I think I've heard that said before. That you have, you'll have a male group, and you have a woman's group, and you know, the man can work on their bonding and all that stuff, and the women can do their stuff. But then if you let them get back together, the men will throw that bonding away like that, and they start competing for the women and stuff, and it goes, uh-huh. It's really weird. It's a weird dynamic, but it happens, and women don't do that.
They don't?
Women can still contain. I don't think it happens like that. I think women can maintain that connectedness with themselves without throwing that connectedness with a group. And I don't think men do. Men
are more
individual, and then they'll throw that all aside. And I don't know why that is, but if you have the same sex thing, men will get to the point directly, because then they can use their own expression. Men use their own terms or their own whatever it is, energy, to express things, where when it's a mixed group, mm-hmm. things are different. I don't know, I underplay it by saying men are maybe a little rougher or cruder or something like that, but it's
blunter.
They get to it, whatever it takes.
Well, what is it they get to? Mm-hmm. What is it they get to?
I don't know.
I think the group, a group of men here being in Holden Village, and all the E and F and I and FPs we have in Holden, might be a little different than out there in general public. But uh-huh. my experience is often that it's a group of men gets together and it's in some ways it can be kind of a shallow, rather shallow, and a lot of BS. And it, sometimes it takes getting in touch with who we really are down inside a little deeper. And sometimes I think that maybe the prompting of some feminine influence there too.
So you think to have women around would help the group to speak on a deeper level?
I think what Rich is saying is valid, but I don't know.
That's what I'm trying to say, is that there's two different, I think there's two different modes of expression. There's a feminine, and then there's a masculine. And I think men are really out of touch with that masculine. Mm-hmm. Men have tried more to adapt using a woman's mode of expression than try to find their own. And I think they're really separate. Mm-hmm. And men will never be able to express themselves using a woman's mode. They can't. Women will always do that better. That's theirs. That's their. And men need to, you know, pull from their own guts what it is they need to express and how they need to express it.
But men are often able to do that with women.
But I think also it comes down to that a lot of men don't have many male friends. Men don't have friends. Women generally do have women friends that they really trust and all that. Men don't.
Does it happen because men get married, or do men not have friends even from an early, early? What do people think about this male friendship issue? What have your experiences been having friends and keeping male friends?
I've got friends back from elementary school that I still do things with, guys that we're still real close, and we understand each other. You know, we haven't lost ties. There's about 20 people that we still be together. It's mostly men.
What do you get together around? Is it discussion or playing cards? Or
well, it's a barbecue, and the wives come, but it's the guys that are the tie, mainly through this thing. And it's a volleyball game, barbecue, and just talking and, you know, having a good time still after all these years. And
so it happens, but it does happen in a couple of contexts.
Well, it does in some cases. A lot of our cases, it doesn't. I mean, half the guys are married.
Uh-huh.
But I think it becomes down to, you know, as kids, I don't know how many guys here got a doll when you're a little boy. You know, to care about something, to show emotions and feelings. You know, I got mostly guns and cowboy boots and, you know, I watch Zorro. You know, it's just, but my sister got all, you know, the dolls and things, and it's taught to be a more open and caring and thing, whereas guys, you're taught and given these things at a young age, mm-hmm. not to respond to a lot of things.
Is there anybody who does, any men here who don't have male friends?
I would say I don't have many male friends. Mm-hmm. My address book is All right, wait a minute. I was raised with three sisters, and I'm really close with my mother. And I do feel a real connection with women, and I think in some ways it's kind of a lack of tolerance with men. If I can't be vulnerable. You talked about the power and some of those defenses and defensiveness. If I can't be vulnerable and if I can't be true to my emotional self, then I simply am intolerant of that and just choose to not have a relationship in that way.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't found many men that you've really been able to?
I have recently. And I think that's what this whole men's movement is about, is kind of men finding that we can have some freedom in a movement to free us from some of those rote expectations and traditional ways of relating.
Mm-hmm. You were going to say something?
I was just going to say, I think that before you said that about elementary school, I think that there is a time in men's lives when they are close to other males, and that's before women enter the scene. When you're young, there's a solidarity and a real bonding and a real love sometimes between little boys up to a certain point in time. You really do care about each other and are willing to really sacrifice for each other. And then I think what happens, at least what seems to happen in my life, is that you wind up getting into kind of the world of hard knocks and you become less willing to share because you can't afford to be vulnerable in the male world here. And one of the things during that time that I was involved in that, my wife had a lot of very good women friends who she could relate to and share with, and I had no one except the superficial stuff that worked. But what's interesting that's happened to us is that since my wife has got more education and has begun working outside the home. And during that time, I've become more sensitive to women's issues. Her friendships have dropped off in the women's world. And I've tried a couple of times to get involved with men's groups, and it doesn't satisfy me. So we wind up having a better relationship between ourselves, and she got less issues there. I would kind of submit that part of the business about women relating to each other better than men has been, part of that has been that men haven't related to women. And men can get so they relate to women. There's really a need for men to relate to men. You know, I mean, the big drive for men to try to find out, you know, how they can relate to men better. I don't see where that leads in terms of. I agree with whoever says more about relating to women.
Is there anyone any men here who have been part of a men's group that's really been an exciting thing for them? Vern was talking interestingly about relating to the gay community, the community of men relating to men in intimate ways. Dave, is it?
Mm-hmm. I've just had a real good experience. I don't feel like I need to say a lot about that.
Mm-hmm. But it's a men's group and you were intentionally involved in
it. I also have, I don't have a lot of exceptionally intimate male friends, but there are two that are wonderfully loving, and I find at least as much emotional, intellectual, and spiritual intimacy with them as I do with my wife. Mm-hmm. Real beautiful relationships, real gift.
One of the things that I find is, to side with Vern, is that my gay friends really know how to be sweet to me, which a lot of men don't know how to be really warm or affectionate. They remember details about things, and they sort of inspire me to take care of the relationship. Have any other people, sort of men, picked up stuff from gay friends about how to be kind and loving or something with men?
I did a production, a musical production, with a predominantly gay male cast, and I learned a lot about feminine side and masculine side from them. Mm-hmm. And just like you were saying, mm-hmm. about being nice to one another.
Yeah.
And when I meet another man, I always, it's probably my doing too, because I always feel a kind of competition between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was able to learn how to dispel that,
mm-hmm.
and just to be friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the older generation, speaking for myself and my age group, we was afraid to show our feminine side, and the fear of being labeled homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all born male and female as an individual. And I think until a man finds his feminine side, he's not a whole person.
Mm-hmm. Are men, go ahead.
And to take the next step, though, I think there's a problem for the younger generation, too. And there's a wonderful tape that a few of us have listened to and bounced around about by Robert Bly, a lecture he did some time back, about the soft male and how the soft male has kind of emerged out of the those in our teens and early 20s during out of the Vietnam era, and how it was no longer okay to be strictly masculine, you know, and to be hard in that way. And I think we really miss something if we're not trying to communicate male to male. If it's just in the interest of communicating with women and being in touch with our nurturing sides, male to female, we're really missing something, I think, of our identity as male and masculine, and being in touch with, I don't know what to call it. Maybe you guys would listen to tape and help me with it some, but. Rites of passage and
initiation.
Being, you know, celebrating your masculinity and sharing that, but not losing touch with what some of us have been felt to have been a greater emphasis, which is the getting in touch with the nurturing and feminine side.
But are gays masculine?
Of course.
They're male. They're definitely, obviously.
To talk more about that.
Can I plug a book?
Sure.
it's not yours. James Nelson is the fellow who did Embodiment. And Embodiment is sexual theology, and it's really a first-rate, I think, important book of theology in the century. And he's done a book on men called Intimate Connections. And he picks up on the Robert Bly notion that men are, and other people, you know, but the same thing, that being masculine is getting in touch with both soft and strong. So it isn't that in fact, as males, we have a nurturing side and a tough hang on yourself. I just think if you I think the picture that sees gays as being not male is a stereotype. It's really a stereotype.
Well, isn't it interesting that frequently men would feel closer to women and they would absolutely not be able to talk to or would feel terribly threatened by gays? When in fact the gay, a man's gay counterpart would have many of the same experiences that he has, being perhaps a primarily heterosexual male.
Yeah, but another man who has different experiences is scary. Mm-hmm. I mean, a woman isn't scary that way. So whether a man is terribly macho or whether a man is terribly tender, if you haven't got either one, if they're a man and you're a man, then it's scary. Because they plug into all your fears about yourself.
Something like that. It's probably bigger than that, I think. I'm not sure.
What do you spell it out?
I'm not sure why men would be petrified by gay men, but the differentness, perhaps, maybe they're afraid of maybe, I don't know. I would guess that something about the sexuality frightens them, or I'm not sure. I'm not at that place where I can figure that out anymore. I've been involved with gay people in so many ways that I don't remember what it was like. But I know it was something real basic. It wasn't just this person is different from me. It was more basic than that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Jody, you were going to say something a minute ago.
It's a little bit off the immediate subject, but to ask ourselves the question, what is it that needs to be changed? And part of our answer, clearly, it has to do with the sort of spirit and our attitudes and ways in which we feel about each other. But I always want to push us to think about that in political and structural ways, too. And one of my problems with, Bob, what you said earlier, is that, see, as I think about what happens to men's relationships with each other, I agree, there is a time in our life when men bond, you know, and it's little boys, and then it gets into athletics, which is an interesting switch, right? And that enters that brings some stuff about competition into our lives. And then the world of athletics sort of expands into the world of work. And I think what I wanted to do was to designate the world of work as an enemy here, and as a political arena in which if we want to change things, we have to take very seriously a change, an agenda that allows for some different kinds of relationships in work. I can't think of very many straight institutions that define the work we do. that allow the kind of community and relationships to be anything but a total negative. I mean, you ain't gonna get nowhere in the medical profession, right? If that's what you're up to. And I think increasingly women are finding them. The more women enter into the mainstream of the workforce, the more that sort of male, competitive, domineering, hierarchical, hustling thing defines what our relationships are about. Right. That's a problem for
everybody. That's what I was saying. When my wife went to work outside the home, her female friends.
Yes, that I agree with.
Was a different person. Yeah. And couldn't relate to her the same way.
I think that sweat factor has a lot to do with it. I think a lot of the thing with men is athletics and for camping or something like that. But and it's competitive. And I think the problem has been that it's always been conquer and conquest, whether it's a mountain or cutting down trees, you know, just with total insensitivity to the environment and all that other stuff, or to women. A savage man that would assault or rape a woman is different from the term wild uses of a wild man. Wild man, this guy is just full of energy and emotion and all that. But he's not a savage man. Rambo is a savage man. And in order to work together, you know, to work together with men rather than to have to conquest, rather to be number one all the time, work together and finding a compromise and. And so often, I think it's interpreted to find compromise is weak, is soft. And I don't think the nurturing side should be viewed. I have a real problem with the language, hard and soft. Firm, maybe. I like the word firm. It shows you've got boundaries, you've got lines and stuff. But the compromise, you can work together without the fear of who's going to be number one, you know? We're all in this together, you know, that kind of deal, you know. And same with sports. When I find out I play basketball or something like that with my friends, and it's not so much just the winning anymore, it's a matter of being together, the comradeship, having fun, you know, that maybe bonding kind of stuff. And that's really refreshing. I find that it's a physical introduction into something maybe more emotional or intellectual later, you know. You go out and play hoops for a while and then talk about stuff that's substantial. And I feel real fortunate that I've been able to do that, but I sense a lot of men around not having that opportunity. And there's a lot of anger and frustration for a lot of men not having other men to share their anxieties or whatever else with. About 20 ideas and I just babbled about it.
Do we all have to go through the Vietnam War to decide that we're all unique, wonderful human beings, that we all can contribute to this world in our own way, and that we don't need to be competitive, that we are who we are, and we can contribute to the world the best way we can? I idealize that. Step aside. Pull yourself away from a male and I need to be macho, I'm feminine, I need to be this, you know, petite and delicate, and just be who you are and know that that's okay, and in that know yourself and love yourself so that you can have an ability to love one another. And just be. It seems like almost an ideal, but it seems very logical thing to strive for, that we're all just humans and we're all trying just to do the best that we can.
But it seems that we also have roles that are set out for us and roles that are very difficult to break away from.
But don't you think you can step aside those?
It's not that easy, Cynthia. You've got a long road of process to go through to learn those things.
And also men don't have good models for this. We really don't see a lot of people who have integrated this in a productive way. We see people who have fallen on one side by being sort of sensitive, but they haven't really made the money or held down the job or something. People on the other side who have really made a lot of, I mean, there's stereotypes that we look at, and when we make our decisions about where we're going to work or who we're going to marry or how we're going to try to live, we don't have good models. We feel scared, we feel alone, we feel a lack of support. We don't know who to talk to about it. I mean, it is.
I think that changed you. In my generation, again, I feel that we were motivated by three things: power, sex, and money. And that's what your main objective was, those three things. That was your, what really highly motivated you, and I don't see that happening today quite so much.
Well, it happens a lot at Penn, for example. I mean, people want to go to Wall Street, power, sex, money.
But
Ingrid?
When I teach women's studies stuff, we look at the same question from the women's point of view. One of the things that I think you just can't underestimate, Cynthia, in response to what you were saying, is that how socialized we are. And they do lots and lots of research on the strength and effect of socialization on all of us and find that, I'm not saying that we're helpless in the face of being socialized, but I don't think we could counteract our socialization until we bring it to consciousness. There's research on parents who are trying to raise their children in non-sexist ways. And those parents have participated in studies where they're put behind one-way mirrors and handed babies dressed in pink or in blue and told the baby's name is John or Jane. And irrelevant is what genitals a baby has. Maybe some of them are boys and some are girls, but they're not what they're dressed as, or they are some of the time, and not it's part of the time. And these parents who are committed to being non-sexist child rearers, who are feminists, who are trying to raise their children in an egalitarian way where they just nourish the baby, grow up as a full human being, exploring their talents, treat the ones in pink differently than they treat the ones in blue. You know, the ones in blue they hold out here and kind of play like this with them and get them to laugh and eye contact and lots of objective stuff or throw them in the air and stuff like that. And the ones in pink, they hold them right next to their bodies. They comfort, they stroke, they, you know. I mean, these are not parents who are trying to change, and they treat these little babies differently if they think it's a girl or a boy. And we're all raised that way. You can say, well, my parents raised me to be completely free, but I don't believe it.
Ingrid, Nelson folks, maybe the same study, but he said there are more male crib deaths than there are female crib deaths, and they think it's because male children don't get handled as much as female children.
Stroke and stuff like that. Yeah, and there are all these differences that start at infancy. They start with newborns, and they continue. You know, we continue. And Jody and I are trying to raise our children in a non-sexist way. We blow it every day.
I went to an AA meeting with one of my kids, and I liked the opening line. I'm a recovering alcoholic. So I've decided I'm a recovering racist. I'm a recovering homophobic. I'm a recovering just about everything.
Yeah.
But not quite the new age.
I'm not arguing that it's hopeless and there's nothing we can do. You know, I think we as adults can all make changes in our lives that are very healthy and can encompass more of ourselves and let more of ourselves bloom. I'm just saying, know the enemy.
But the counterpart of if socialization is so deep, then change really depends on being in a support group. Having people around you that support you in a new direction.
Mm-hmm. Form communities. Go to meetings.
Going back to think about models, I think that's sort of, there's almost a foundation. Men don't have very good models. They don't have fathers. The fathers are there for 30 seconds or 15 minutes a day. What have you got to grow on? What do you get to go on? Mm-hmm. And in the past, I mean, a son would go with his father, say, out to the field for hours a day. You know, we're programmed to have that, you know, to go hunt for the food or something, spend time with their fathers. And I don't know how many men here have had that.
Can I plug a book?
stop and you have to go find your father, maybe in the middle of your life.
Yeah.
You know,
that's exactly what this book is about.
What you just
said. My spouse gave it to me for free.
So are men more disadvantaged in this whole thing than I suspect not than women? I mean, because I think women have a head start on us in terms of trying to raise consciousness. I don't think that they've necessarily done better than us, because there's always this sort of backlash, you know, things just sort of get bogged down.
When you were talking about the same set, whether same-sex group was got to things quicker than mm-hmm. And someone kind of said, and I can't remember, someone over here talked as if women knew how to do that better. I don't think that's true. I think the same sorts of things still happen when women get together in mixed groups, that there gets to be some competition. I'm sure it depends on the generation, maybe more mm-hmm. with my generation than with the young. Well, but I've watched a lot of younger women too, and I don't think that's true. I think one thing that operates is an awful lot of idealization of women's experience, and you know, we've heard a lot of that tonight, I think, that somehow women's experience is so wonderful. And I think I work in an office where we are a totally female office, and I wouldn't trade, I love it. It's wonderful, we can be supportive, we're non-hierarchical, there's all these neat things that are happening, but I think we have to be careful not to idealize women's experience as somehow being full and complete and all this. I think there's as many things to deal with in that situation too. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things all of us individually are struggling with in that. So I don't think maybe that some of the mixed messages we give to men too is somehow holding up our experience to say, mm-hmm. look at what we can do, what we want. And that's not really fair, because I think all of us are struggling.
Mm-hmm. I think all of us are struggling, but in my experience, I've had some very good women's support group that have dealt with issues on a very basic level, and we can share and talk very easily, which I know Vern was very envious of for a while, that I was having this kind of experience with some very good women friends. So I think there is a, for some of us, we've had that kind of experience. I don't think it happens across the country.
Well, I have a lot, as I say, my work relationships and things are, but I think I always feel a little uneasy when people start talking like they have it all and they have it more. I think that that's a real dangerous time, and I think there's a little of that right now. Well, women have it so much better.
Well, yeah, and I think part of what, I speak as a non-expert here, but I think part of what might have catalyzed the women's movement was women experiencing themselves as disadvantaged and sort of the poor, and suddenly realizing that they had something very profound to share with one another, to help each other to deal with this. Perhaps that's what's coming about with the men's stuff that's going on right now, because we're realizing that in some ways, though men have had power per se, there's a certain spiritual power or emotional power or a sense of rootedness in the world or rootedness in relationships that men have been missing out on for a long time. And so there's this attempt at this point to recover some of that organic humanness. And insofar as men can see themselves as lacking something and needing one another especially, I think that this might be catalyzed for men as well. But I think men need very much to reach out to each other. And I think the gay experience might be a place where I'd encourage a lot of men here, if you haven't any gay friends or if you haven't talked to gay men about what it means to be gay, what it means to be faced with AIDS, what it means to be struggling in the world, they could be some men who could really bring you very quickly into a sense of what it means to be, to have that kind of community, because gay men frequently have a very intense bonding closeness. And they can really be people to teach other men, straight men, what it means to be a different kind of man.